Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we've got a little bit of basketball to talk about, being that it's the first round of the NCAA tournament starting tomorrow, and Florida State has a chance to show us what ultimately the season will become on Friday. We have a bunch of different aspects to talk about. Football, both roster composition, and we've got a decent set of significant dates for some pretty impactful 2019 recruits that will start to kind of lay out the broader map of what that recruiting class might look like. And then going to touch real briefly on baseball as well. So nice to be able to bounce around a little bit tonight. We've got what I think will be a pretty full show, and want to jump right into it. And as always, thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, something that you and I thoroughly enjoy using and thoroughly enjoy being able to talk about, because it's a authentic pairing, and can't think of any better partner than the good folks over in Louisiana.
I used some tonight, actually, man. We had like taco bowls, and they were not without the shell.
Right.
But I try to eat kind of healthy when I'm home, because I'm on the road so much. You know, you end up eating stuff. It's not so good for you. So spice those up, and that was really good. Shout out to my wife for putting us together, although she does not listen to the show. She gets to hear me enough when I'm on the phone with sources. So we have a bunch of basketball questions. And to be honest, I don't feel like taking a bunch of basketball questions. The one we got a lot of, and I think this was a really, really smart article by Matt Minnick, one of the best basketball writers out there. He works for Tomahawk Nation, as does Michael Rosner. And the title of his post was, Florida State has already exceeded expectations this season. They lost three NBA players. They still went 500 in a very difficult league. They made the tournament for the second year in a row. That is their sixth in the last 10 years. Man, a lot of people are like, hey, do you agree with this? And it's like, I do, man. I really do. I don't know what more you could possibly want out of the Florida State basketball program, a program that's not well-funded, not well-supported. It's something we use to pass the vast majority of people use to pass the time between football and spring football. All right? I don't get it. Like, there's a lot of drive-by fans. You watch a couple games a year and think they know what they're talking about. And I don't really bother arguing with them, because I can already tell that they don't read Michael and Matt. And if they don't, I can just tell they're uninformed. So I'll just tell, hey, just go read those guys. They really know what they're talking about. You know, my thing is, I'd like to see Florida State make the tournament about 40% of the time. I'd like to see them graduate their players if they can, not embarrass the program, play hard, and be an entertaining product, which is the main gripe I had with Hamilton back in the day, was that his product, it was kind of unwatchable to me. If you're going to play like a super grinded out defensive style, you better be winning rings, because otherwise that's not fun to watch. Nobody, I don't want to watch a 60-40 game. That's terrible. That's not entertaining. It's entertainment. It's something Florida State fans, I think, can be proud of, but you can't apply the same standards to basketball that you do to football. Right? Wake Forest bat or football fans are not out there lamenting the fact they don't win the ACC. They would look like idiots. That's how a lot of these Florida State fans look, as far as, you know, the sidewalk basketball fans look. That's just my thing, dude. He's gone to the NCAA tournament 60% of the time in the last 10 years. I think 4-10 would be a success, to be honest. I don't expect them to ever do anything in the tournament, really. I mean, if it happens, it's great. But just making it is good enough for me. I don't think the resources they put into this program, you should expect much better. And a lot of people are still like, well, this is not good enough. Granted, I think that's probably the lunatic fringe who posts on message boards and whatnot. And look, we know that the vast majority of people will never post on a message board. Although, look, a lot of the diehards are certainly listening to the podcast right now. I think the chance that you downgrade if you make a coaching change and backslide as a program is significantly higher than the chance you upgrade. That's my take on it.
And I'm not going to feign that I'm a college basketball expert, but it's just a school that you're only going to do so well. You can, you know, you can hope for maybe you get one or two unique kids and you have a kind of a little bit of a gelling of some leadership and one or two pieces of talent that you don't have. And maybe, 7 or 8 years ago, you get the ball to roll your way and you beat VCU and you have a tournament run like that. I think this program's, I don't want to say the mountaintop, but I think the day that Florida State makes the Sweet 16, that's the highest point of success that you'll probably see in a decade plus. It's just a place where the ceiling's only going to be so high. And Ham's done a remarkable job of raising the floor He has evolved in the type of athlete that he recruits. He's also been able to get better players, but it's resulted in a little bit of a change of style of play. And I think Florida State's kind of hitting up at right about the highest, I don't want to say their highest level of consistency, but this is about what this program operating at a higher level can achieve. It's just a program that, as it's currently supported and the resources given to it, is only going to have so much success and maybe a one real special year every 10, 12, 15 years.
I think we're on the same page there. Like, and to be honest, I find the people who actually watch most of the basketball games are pretty reasonable about it. It's the fans who start watching in March who kind of have these weird expectations and start making noise about a coaching change. The one, I think the most common thread in that is that they assume that you could get a better coaching coach than Hamilton, which, number one, he actually does develop his players really well. Now, scheme-wise, could they do some different things? Could they have better adjustments? Maybe. But the problem is this, and I see this all across sports and sports talk and all this other stuff, is that fans focus on what the negative is and assume that the new coach could fix that. But they also assume, incorrectly here, that the new coach could maintain the current positives.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly. Is going to be at or greater than the current coach's positives. Completely agree.
Right. Hey, what if we could just get a guy in here who could do something with all these five stars? Guess what? How many of those guys that can do something with five stars can actually get five stars? There's not many of those guys, and they don't go to Florida State. They don't go play in the Donald L. Tucker Civic Center. I mean, it's not a good program for basketball. They do the best they can. You get a guy in here, he could do much better with this level of talent. Yeah, they had a guy who had a reputation for that. You remember him? And then he went like six losing seasons before Hamilton took over because he couldn't get players. I don't know. That's my thing on it. It's a fun product to watch. I think I actually enjoy it. I used to not like it at all back when they just played nothing but defense and couldn't score at all. They graduate their kids, and it gives us something to watch in the offseason. So speaking of something to watch, man, I'm excited to watch this spring game. I don't know about you. And I'm excited to tailgate with our listeners at Township, the sister restaurant of Madison Social, before the spring game. It's going to be awesome. So here's what we're going to do. How do you get in? You got to get your shirt. You got to get your Nolcast shirt, your Punting is Bunting shirt. Go to puntingisbunting.com or buntingispunting.com. You get that shirt. You wear that shirt on the day of the spring game. You go to Township for our spring game tailgate. You get a free beer, a War Daddy Lager that they're brewing. Brew Bus down in St. Pete is the brewery for it. Going to be awesome. We'll talk a little ball. Then we'll all go watch the new Gulf Coast offense, assuming they have some receivers healthy. That'd be good. Over in Doak, it's going to be a good time. Get your shirt. Support the podcast for sure. Support our sponsors, Madison Social, Township, Central, and Soto. I don't know, man. I'm excited. We've already sold a lot of shirts. Now, here's the deal. You cannot buy the shirt day of, and you cannot pick the shirt up day of. Orders have got to be in the business March 26th to ensure they get shipped to you. Why? Well, because they need to know how much beer to have, right? That's important. They need to have a good head count for this thing. We know it's going to be over 100. We're just trying to figure out how much, because a lot of people, you know, do tend to wait. So if you're a procrastinator type, don't wait until March 27th. Get this thing done this week. Put your order in. Support the Nolcast. It's a great looking shirt. If you try to go to the link on Monday or Sunday night and you had some kind of problem with the link, shout out to one of our listeners, Jen, who alerted us to it. She gets a free shirt for that. And we've got that fixed now. So now we'll take you to the correct link for the shirt. So if you were one of those few people who tried that, please do try again. And we appreciate your support. We also got a question about this in our email. Hey, I need a little information. I'm planning on attending the spring game tailgate at Township. Awesome. I'm traveling from Tampa and bring my small children. Is it okay that they attend, or should I take them to Madison Social instead? Thank you for your help. Look forward to the game. That's a great question. Look, we're not expecting this to be some huge drunk fest, all right? I mean, I still got to watch the game and be coherent. I know you do as well. It's not really that kind of scene. I don't think people are going to be like falling down drunk at noon for the spring game. At least I hope not. You know, we know that our listeners are kind of, I think the majority of them are kind of late 20s, to early 40s. So I think most of them are kind of beyond that. We're not expecting to be that. You can totally bring your kids. And I think it's going to be an awesome time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that won't be an issue.
And it's one free beer, not like a million free beers.
Exactly. I think my godson will be there. He's but about 3 or 4 years old. And yeah, I think it'll be a fun atmosphere, a little something for everybody. And look forward to meeting a lot of the listeners. And go take a look at those shirts. Fantastic idea that we've been able to put together. And appreciate all the support and feedback that we've received so far. It's a great opportunity to support the podcast, even if you're not coming, and appreciate just a lot of the messages that we've received. So, Bud, look forward to meeting everybody. And with that, we'll jump into kind of the meat and potatoes of the podcast.
All right. So if you recall, after the first junior day, we talked a lot about a kid named Travis J. And he's a local kid out of Madison County. Edgar, there have been some good players out of Madison County, or Florida State.
A couple of the Bulldogs could play, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Now, Chris Thompson is a guy who could tote the rock, but
Geno Hayes, yeah. Jacoby McDaniel.
Taysom Geno.
I wish Ira Denson would not have got caught up in the shoe game.
Ira got a little sideways, maybe pulled a gun on a teammate or his friend did.
Allegedly.
When Mario, well, no reason to go getting people's names involved in that. But yeah, there was one incident in particular that was not necessarily the best representation of everybody involved.
I tell you, man, if you hold this ad money for me, I'm going to take your shoes as ransom. All right. So a lot of questions about Travis J.
But wait, bud. What? He's a three-star. That's my concern.
He is a three-star. Oh, God. All right. So let me just explain for our casual listeners. If you're a super recruiting diehard, you can probably skip the next 30 seconds. But Travis J, 6'1", 180. He's listed on a lot of sites as a safety. Florida State actually likes him as a corner. Ingram, do you want to tell me what his offer list looks like? Have you seen his offer list recently?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and put a few more sands on the scale of those who have offered him than those who run a recruiting service when I'm kind of balancing out whose opinion I'll put more weight on.
All right. So look, I'm not here to bash the job that recruiting services do. They do a good job, but they do not do a good job in March. They just haven't had enough time to see all these kids yet. I'll share something with you. I have a backlog of 2019 film that I'm cutting up for our video stuff from December. It takes a while to get through all this stuff and say, hey, this kid's really good and that kid's really good. And to have your cross checkers go around and look at a kid. And you know, like today, the 247 class of 2020 rank came out. And I was looking at it and I was like, okay. And then I said, oh, man. All right, this kid they got ranked 100 spots lower than this guy is a lot better than him. And I think part of it is just maybe only one person has seen a kid. So how do you have perspective to say, okay, now I've seen both kids, right? You may have one guy who's seen one dude and one guy who's seen another dude. And in the rankings meetings, they're both riding for their guy. Travis J plays in a small town. He does have like 17 interceptions, which is a ton. He's an excellent basketball player. They measured him in 6'1", 180, over a 75-inch wingspan, and they love him at cornerback. I had a guy on that staff tell me, we think we have the best two corners in the state committed right now, which I don't agree with. However, I do think that they have like two of the top four in the state. Jay's a freakish athlete, man. That's a great kid to get and a really nice piece for this class. He is the lowest rated commit in their class right now, Ingram, I believe. And yet, I will tell you, out of the six guys they have committed, I think he's the second best. And I think he is, the gap between him and the number three rated player in the class is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jay is a national top 100 kid, personally.
Interesting.
Right now, he's rated 427. That's not real high, and I can tell you the staff doesn't care. And you can also tell how much they like him, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. They are extremely selective right now. You know, I was talking to one of the coaches, and he was telling me, you know, just how few guys are truly takes for them right now. And by takes, I mean, if this guy wanted to call up and commit, they would say, yes, welcome aboard, as opposed to, hey, man, we love you. We just want to see a little more from you. You know, we're going to stop by your high school in spring. You know, we want to see the SAT score, whatever. there's not a whole lot of takes on their board. I mean, maybe like 20 or 30 kids, I really think, as far as realistic types. Jay's one of them. They love him. He's a freakish athlete, extremely physical, which is what we're going to ask the corners to do in Florida State's new scheme. FSU fans should be really happy about him. And you guys know, if you listen to me, I'm not just blowing smoke about whatever recruit Florida State gets. There's times and I'm like, yeah, you know, he could turn into something, but he's not special yet. Jay is already elite, in my opinion.
Oh, Bud Elliott, the smoke blower over there. Always, always, constantly the optimist, Bud. I hear that all the time from people.
Hey, yeah. You know what's also solid? The number one recruit in the nation is visiting this weekend. 6'5", 235, 240. As of now, pretty much unanimously thought the best player in the nation. I don't know if that'll hold. He is an excellent player. I think he's probably going to end up as a top 10 guy nationally. We'll see. It's always good to get him on a visit. Do I think Florida State has a chance? At this point, I can't say they have a realistic chance at him, but there's no downside to having the number one defensive end in the nation come to your campus, because he's going to come away impressed with at least some of the aspects of your campus and your coaching staff. He'll probably go back and tell his buddies about it. Maybe he gets to talk to Jaden Woodby, and maybe Woodby tells him how much he loves Tallahassee. I got to tell you, the folks in Tallahassee love Jaden Woodby. Just, man, they are over the moon about him, about his maturity. Just a nice kid to people around the program, and somebody who they really want to be an ambassador for the school. I was told
we started hearing about this on his visit.
On his visit.
And honestly,
yeah,
I was wondered if this was just hyperbole around a kid or what, but no, it really seems like they think that kid is just on a real good path. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, remember on the visit show, this was a couple months ago, we were talking about how we were told that Woodby was asking really mature questions that you could tell, like, he had written them down, and he came on his Florida State visit, even though it was the first time he'd ever visited FSU, kind of on a mission to really get to the bottom of some things he wanted to know about, and some things that were just kind of, like, they really mattered to him. And you could tell that the kid was a thinker, which was good. He's also an excellent athlete. So Kayvon Thibodeau coming is always good. They've also had some good visitors in the last couple weeks, man. A couple we can run down here.
Yeah, they've had a lot of kids. This is a spring break on campus. It's a decent time to get kids in. You can give them full attention. You know, they may not have maybe some of the scenery that they would otherwise be able to take in, but it's a good time to be able to really get a kid in, show them campus, and have full focus without having to, worry about necessarily pieces on your roster. I knew a kid that they had a lot of people consider the top player out of the state of Tennessee this year, wide receiver, Lance Wilholt, a kid out of Nashville.
Lance is a really solid receiver prospect. I mean, somebody who I know that they're excited about. I think he's fairly high on their board. We'll talk about this in a minute, but it's always good to get a kid from Tennessee down. You got to figure, if you're going to sign an out-of-state kid, the vast majority of the time, unless it's like Woodby, the kid's going to need to visit multiple times. And so whatever connection they have there, getting him down, that's always good. I know Walt Bell is certainly very connected in Tennessee as well as in the Carolinas. So, you know, that's going to help a lot there. But a good-sized kid. I mean, 6'3", 180.
6'2", 6'3".
Yeah.
Yeah, he's big wide receiver. My uncle was actually the baseball coach and football coach at Franklin Road Academy, the high school that Lance hails from. Unfortunately, my uncle passed a couple years ago, but my aunt still works at the school, and I should be able to get a pretty decent idea as to what's going on with a pretty talented wide receiver prospect.
They're able to show him around campus and make a good impression on him. We'll see how that goes. I think most people think Tennessee is probably the likely landing spot there, but he's the number one player in Tennessee, man. So that would not be unimpressive if they were able to go and go do that. Mahmoud Diabate, kind of a jumbo linebacker / defensive end. I think he'd probably play more of the weak side end in this 4-3 defense at Florida State's running. He's from Auburn, Alabama. Really big kid, an explosive player. Wonder what they have him rated at. To be honest, I really haven't looked at a whole lot of the ratings yet, because I just don't think they're worth much until we get to like the latter part of summer. That then we really start to see some of this stuff. Like I think the top, like your top 50 kids are probably not going to drop out of the top 350, right? They're going to stay in there somewhere. But you got kids in the top 10 who could easily move down to like 40, and you got kids, you know, rated like 1,000 who could easily end up in the top 100 right now. Mm-hmm. So he's rated the
He's the top 200 prospect.
Yeah, top 200. You know, I think that's probably fair. I mean, just doing this for a decade now. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Looking at his film, he's 6'4", 220, long, explosive. Obviously, there's the Auburn connection there. I think Florida State staff, old staff, was at least communicating with him, but they did not offer it. The new staff actually offered him in mid-February, and he came down on a visit. He brought his mom. I know she was very impressed with the visit, as was he. He also went over there and saw the Gators as well. Nothing but good things for FSU there. Do I think they're going to get him at this moment? No. But look, for the kid to come down early, I think shows a real interest. So keep working that relationship.
Absolutely. So we've hit up Tennessee, Alabama, and now we'll jump into some kids from Georgia. I know the Jayshon Sheffield kid is somebody that Florida State fans, if they really follow recruiting, will be familiar and maybe have been familiar for about a year or so. I know he and his teammate Jalen Simpson made their way over from kind of the East Georgia Savannah area, St. Simons.
Yeah, look, it's always good. We know that they were extremely high on Florida State at one point. Obviously, Clemson's been talking to him. Ohio State's been talking to him. You know, I don't know exactly where they rank on Florida State's board. There may be a couple of kids who are higher, but I don't think there's tons of kids who are higher. Simpson profiles more, I think, as a cornerback or potentially a safety. Sheffield, I like him at receiver. Some people like him on defense. But he's certainly a strong athlete, and it's good to get those kids over. Obviously, they've been a couple times now. This is the first time they've actually visited with Jimbo gone and Taggart in place. I actually saw Jimbo this weekend at the Adidas 7-on-7 camp. So that was interesting. And his son plays for one of the Tallahassee Record Breakers 7-on team. So he's allowed to actually be at the camp, and he was there checking out some prospects. Watching his son, as you're allowed to do per NCAA rules. So good job taking advantage of that, as always. It's good that Sheffield and Simpson were able to come over and visit with the new staff and kind of get a feel for them. I think they came away impressed.
It'd be interesting. Sheffield's one of those kids that they were in a real good place for last year and kind of fell off, but he's one of the higher ranked prospects in the state of Georgia. It'd be just curious to follow his recruitment and see how much traction, if any, they get with some of those kids that they had established a pretty strong relationship around this time last year. So, Bud, why don't we move maybe away from particular players and examine a little bit more of a broader look at as far as a position goes. How many wide receivers do you think is the ultimate number that they're looking to take in the class of 2019? And in a perfect world, if they could take two or three kids right now, who do you think would make up the class?
I think that they are ultimately going to take three or four, but I think they're being very picky right now on that. Frank Ladson is the top receiver on their board for sure. He's out of Homestead, South Dade High School. Now, he likes Clemson a ton. They love him and his teammate Tyreek Stevenson. Tyreek Stevenson is the third corner they want to take in this class. I think Stevenson is like a bigger LaMarcus Joyner. So that's pretty high praise. Just a freakish athlete and can do things all over the field for you. If they want to get Ladson, they got to get Ladson on campus soon. They got to figure out a way. He's already visited Clemson and is going to go back for the spring game. So, can you get Ladson on campus? If not, well, it doesn't matter if he's your number one prospect or not, because you're going to have to move on at some point. I don't think they're ready to move on from Ladson yet, but if they don't get any traction with him, then they're going to probably have to move on. I think with Ladson, the pitch is Florida State's receiver numbers, as far as the number of bodies they have on campus, are not real great. Clemson has taken a lot of kids who look like Ladson in recent years. T. Higgins, and then last year they got Justin Ross out of Alabama, just two really freakish big-type dudes. And so if you're Florida State, it's certainly a playing time pitch. Hey, Frank, this is a real selective class. We want you to come in here and play early and play often. And so I think that's what they're going to have to try and do. So they would take him. If they could flip Jaden Hazelwood or Dominic Blaylock from Georgia, I think they would definitely do that. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think they would take Jordan Whittington for sure if they could flip him from Texas. Theo Weiss from Texas they would also take. I'm pretty sure. Treylon Burks is a kid at Arkansas. I know that they're in on. I don't think they got a great shot, but we'll see. They would take him, like, if he wanted to call and commit right now. Marcus Washington, the kid at a Trinity Catholic in St. Louis, they would definitely take. They want him on a visit. Lance Wilhoit, I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. Joe Nagata, for sure, would be a take for them, but he's out of California, and his brother plays for the University of Washington, so I don't think so. And then I think John Dunmore would likely be a take. I'm not 100% sold on Sheffield as far as would they definitely take him if he wanted to commit. We'll see. Daylon Wright out of Texas, I think, as a kid, they would probably look at as a take. But again, he's not going to come there. You know, there's a lot of sort of shooting for the stars there. At some point, they're either going to need to hit or expand their board. Now, the key word there is at some point. I don't think they need to do that like now, but just know that they'll probably expand their board once a few kids end up not visiting for spring or telling them no or committing elsewhere.
I think one thing, and look, it's, we're kind of at the part with the coaching staff where we don't have a whole lot of complaints with them in general because haven't had the opportunity to show any real shortcomings. But I will say that one strength that seems to be with Taggart and his staff is that they have a pretty good idea as to whether or not they think they're ultimately going to be considered with a prospect and whether or not they're just going to be kind of a top three at the end of the day or whether or not they have a legit chance to get a guy. So interesting to see how that continues. We've had from what I can tell, a pretty good decision making as far as when to cut bait with a prospect, and looks like maybe a wide receiver will be a place where that strategy may ultimately have to come into play.
Yeah, I think you're saying that based on how they closed, right?
I'm saying that how they closed and kids that they could look. Florida State could have been. I'm not saying they could have signed Justin Fields, but they could have chased after Justin Fields and wasted time with that. They didn't. They've made some smart decisions as far as how much they really want to be involved in the kid and how much time and attention and whether or not they ultimately think they have a realistic chance of getting a signature.
I agree with you. I want to see if that trend continues into this class, obviously, and I want to see how long they stay shooting for the stars. Maybe they'll get them, but I do think that you need to have reasonable backup plans in place so that you're not too late in terms of shifting to those guys. But that's something every staff, I feel like, has to kind of feel out. You can't think, hey, we're Florida State just because of the Seminole on our jersey or on our polo, we're going to get whoever we want. It doesn't work that way. The McElwain staff, I feel like, thought that when they were in Gainesville, and that really, really burned them. Now, Florida State's already shown a lot better ability than the McElwain staff did to recruit, and we saw that in the close to last year. And we've also seen their ability to recruit other programs. So I'm not worried about that. I'm just interested to see what the timeline looks like as far as expanding the board and looking at some other guys too.
Two other prospects that are visiting here in the very near future are Tyson and the last name that's so challenging to pronounce as well.
We said on the last show, remember? It's
You saying.
All right, one more time for the folks out there and for my co-host. Love you, buddy. You know,
this ain't going to be the last time, but yeah, please, one more time.
Tyson Fomacan, can.
Yeah, okay. Fomacan.
Just call him Barbasol, right?
Yep, exactly.
Tyson Fomacan and Sam Howell are both going to be visiting this spring. Guess what? They really like Clemson. Guess what else? Clemson's got a lot of quarterbacks. Apparently, Trevor Lawrence today went for a 50-yard touchdown run. So, haven't seen that from him a whole lot in his career. I don't think you got to worry too much about Clemson with those guys, simply because I think Clemson and Georgia are going to have to take a backseat this year in quarterback recruiting. I just think it's going to be very hard to sell playing time at those two schools. And Florida State's going to have its chance to make its impression on both Fomacan and Howell. Fomacan is the guy from Avon Farms, Connecticut. And Howell is from Carolina, and FSU's very high on both of them, and they appear to be two of the better quarterbacks in the nation. I think both of them will finish top 10. On a previous episode, I discussed how I think this year for quarterbacks is extremely down, extremely. You know, I had a chance to see David Baldwin, who Florida State has not yet offered. He's at the IMG Academy, kid originally from California. Real nice kid. He did some good things this weekend at the Adidas 7-on-7, and then he also kind of, you know, missed some throws, and he doesn't play on that 7-on-7 team normally, so you can tell he didn't really have the great chemistry with that 7-on team, the Rat Pack out of Orlando, which is Francois's old team, or he might have been on Central Florida Star. Gosh, some of these 7-on teams run together in my mind now. I'm kind of waiting to form an opinion on him because I want to see him play with a team with which he has some chemistry, like IMG, as opposed to a 7-on team that he just picked up as a free agent this weekend. So looks like they're going to get their top two quarterback prospects on campus, and we'll do so this spring. So that's good news right there, man. One thing I forgot to mention here, Florida State actually has a mosque on campus, which could help with Mahmood, mm-hmm. the kid from Auburn. That's not something that all Southern schools have. Just wanted to point that out.
Interesting point. Something that may be more and more of an issue as we go down the line. But good point. No, that's not something you're going to find necessarily in a whole lot of random rural towns sprinkled throughout the southeastern U.S. So that could be something to consider. Bud, we were really fortunate in the last podcast to get to a lot of great questions submitted from listeners. We still had a few that we didn't get to address, and why don't we go ahead and circle back and kind of use the remaining time that we have on this podcast to try to knock out some of those remaining questions.
Let's do that, man. All right, got a couple questions here about Stephen Godfrey's famous Meet the Bag Man article, which seems to be more relevant by the day, given the whole FBI scandal going on in basketball.
The whole college athletics in general, but yeah, the college basketball FBI scandal is... Helped only but to illuminate the remaining few that thought amateur athletics were actually going on.
When you refer to GA as being fully committed, quote-unquote, how does this differ from the Ole Miss situation? Is it because they are traditional power? I've read Godfrey's The Bag Man and understand what happens during recruiting. Is GA doing something else? Not trying to get sued here, so I will say that I'm not sure what George is doing. I think they're doing a great job of being fully committed. Certainly, I think we went over the idea of setting up a hunting camp would be a creative way to get money to recruits last podcast, didn't we?
We've mentioned something like that. Yeah, I think we've mentioned some various ideas.
I got one better for you. Check this out.
Yeah, please.
Let's say you're a single mom and your son happens to be a really good football player, right?
Yeah.
And it's at some point we're basically just discussing different ways to do money laundering here, right? Like at
its core. Oh, that's essentially what recruiting. I mean,
with a sports angle, yeah,
right.
Start painting, paint, because you know what? People spend tons money on art, right?
I was gonna say, as the son of an artist, I can see where you're going,
and
here.
It's totally subjective. Dude, mm-hmm.
It absolutely is.
Preferably abstract painting so that people can't judge like
tell
your
them,
lines and your
tell
colors.
Tell them you're a
skills.
Fan of Jackson Pollock and you just love taking a pan of Kate and throwing it at a blank canvas. And once that canvas speaks to you, you put it up for $25,000 a piece.
Right.
Absolutely.
Dude. And the thing is, it's all subjective. The NCAA can't be like, you clearly didn't think this painting was good. Right? Be like, the hell I didn't? I thought it was great.
What are you, the hell are you doing? Let me show you this Jackson Pollock that sold for, you know, freaking $10 million.
It would look great in whatever, like, you know, First International Bank of Atlanta or whatever in their lobby for 25 grand or what have you. That is a really smart one, by the way. I don't know if anybody has ever done that. If they have, we don't know about it because it's probably just it works so well. But, that's what I would do. I would paint or sculpt or draw or something. Something very subjective.
Absolutely brilliant. That is not something that I had ever thought about. Georgia is fortunate in that they are a kind of a traditional power as far as maybe not in record, but in the fact that they're a well-established SEC school, happen to play in a ridiculously talented state that has continued to grow at a much greater rate than the rest of the country. You know, are they doing something? Georgia wants to win. Georgia's willing to play at the highest level. So we'll see how that happens and how long they're able to maintain the level that they're recruiting at right now. It undoubtedly becomes more challenging, as we referenced 5-10 minutes ago, with the quarterback prospect. When you sign two or three loaded classes, means it's all the more of a sell. I think what you said is probably about all that we can say as far as that first part of the meet the bag man reference of lines of questioning.
But yes, Georgia is a traditional power. That does help.
And they're in a they're in an absolutely loaded state. And the other unique thing about Georgia is with its current coaching staff is that Georgia has always done fairly well in the Metro Atlanta area, and obviously Eastern Georgia is a strong point for it. But one of the weak places was Southwest Georgia. Well, where's Kirby Smart from? Where did Kirby Smart play high school ball? Where did Kirby Smart's father coach for 30 years? Bainbridge, Georgia. It's turned that little corner of the section of the state that has always been a little bit more challenging for Georgia to recruit in because of just geography, really. But it has allowed them it's allowed them a better foothold than maybe they've had otherwise when it comes to recruiting Southwest Georgia. Bainbridge is, for those that don't know, Bainbridge is like, 18 minutes north of Tallahassee, 25 minutes north of Tallahassee. It's about as Southwest Georgia as Southwest Georgia can get.
So kid just followed me from Eatonville, Florida, which is, it's like I-4 and 423 and 414, population 2,277. So always cool to learn new towns. I feel like if I'm ever on Jeopardy or something like this, right? And they're like, hey, what state is this city in? I'm going to nail that stuff because I got to know the hometowns and like the cities of like 500 kids a year.
I will say that following recruiting gives you an interesting little base of small towns and a much better idea as to what's what in the particular school you may be of interest in and where they recruit. But yeah, it's a great way to pick up obscure geography.
Also, newspaper names.
Mm, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like we could play this real quick trivia game here. Like the Plain Dealer, you know where that's at?
Is that Cleveland?
Cleveland, yeah. How about Times-Picayune?
Well, yeah, that's, right.
That's probably,
yeah. New Orleans, right?
The Intelligencer.
Ooh, I do not know that one.
Actually, I think it's the Post Intelligencer is the Seattle one. How about the Current, the Hartford Current? Well, obviously Hartford, Connecticut. You know that the Blade, or the Blade is?
I do not know where that's out of.
Toledo.
Okay. I think that sounds familiar, actually.
Yeah. We could do this. How about the Commercial Appeal?
Ooh, the Commercial Appeal. That is, where's that out of? That's out of the Midwest somewhere, I thought.
Memphis.
Okay.
I think Jeff Calkins used to write there.
Let's see. Bud, this is kind of had two different questions tied to the Meet the Bagman piece that we referenced. The story referenced how, in some case, shadow boosters will dry up funds for recruiting if they get tired of a coach. Do you think this happened to any degree with Jimbo and co. near the end of his tenure at Florida State?
No, I don't.
I don't think it had a chance to happen because we weren't really pursuing. We didn't really have a whole lot of kids that coach had to go ask for extra help with, if you get my drift.
Not that he ever would have done that.
No,
anyway.
No, he never would have. Of course. But I'm just saying, when
this is all hypothetical,
when you hypothetically aren't recruiting the number one quarterback in the country, you don't have to bother people or maybe hope that something gets done that you're not aware of course. So I don't know. I don't know that took place. I think it's interesting to watch. I find that to be true. And it doesn't just mean if a school becomes more committed that they're, you know, throwing shoe boxes full of money at kids. It's you can kind of see it institutionally. I would say that two schools in the Big Ten kind of stand out to me right now. Minnesota and Indiana have both made like institutional commitments to be significantly more relevant in football than they had been previously. And you can kind of see like a 4 or 5 year shift in just what a program or what an institution is really wanting to do and maybe what they'll what they're willing to accept one or two flaws off the field in that pursuit, that chase.
The other element here is that like it's not like Florida State was trending downward for a long time. It was a precipitous and quick fall. So it wasn't like boosters had time to get hypothetically
exactly.
You know, boosters had time to sour on it, and then you know it was a different coach on signing day and on early signing day. So no, I don't think that happened. Interesting question,
though. Yeah, very interesting question.
Oh, we got some baseball questions here, and much like the basketball thing, we're not going to take a bunch of individual baseball questions because, look, only a certain percentage of the fan base, largely people in Tallahassee, actually care about baseball. It's probably the second or third most popular sport at Florida State, depending on who you ask. But you know, the one thing here, man, it was so sad. You know, Tyler Holton goes down immediately with injury, and a lot of people asked, hey, like, what were your expectations for the season? And they asked us before this happened, but we didn't get the chance to answer because we were doing some other Q&A stuff. We almost need to take a look at this now and say, how much should you lower your expectations now that Holton is out?
Mm-hmm. Your number one pitcher and a kid that would have been a frequent starter for you at first base?
Yeah. So one of your better players in the field and definitely your best pitcher. I mean, this guy had a 20% strikeout percentage minus walk percentage. That's insane. Mm-hmm. He was a dominant shutdown starter. Look, this team can still get to the postseason, and I know people are probably pretty sour right now because they gave up a lead in Gainesville, but look, Florida's the best program in the country by a lot right now. They do that to a lot of teams. You know, it can still get to the College World Series, but I do have a hard time seeing them being able to win it without Holton, because if they were going to do it this year, I think it was the ability to throw a lot of different arms at teams, you know, play better defense, hopefully. You know, now, man, that's like 120 plus innings that you're not going to be able to replace at a high level. That means your number two becomes your number one, your three becomes your two, your four becomes your three. You know, do you have to bump somebody from the pen? Now your pen's not as good. And the lineup is a good lineup, but it's not like a crazy, like super deep lineup like Florida State has occasionally had, or frequently had actually, where you know, everybody seems to be a tough out and it grinds and it works pitchers. It's not. Like, there's a couple automatic outs in this lineup. So their plan to be able to you know, shut people down with arms is now diminished. So that's disappointing. There's no guarantee with it, though. I mean, they certainly could win. Baseball's weird. You know what we do like, though? We like guarantees, man.
We like working with experts and having the knowledge that once we get to a place where we want to move, we've got people that are there to support us and there to walk us through what otherwise can be kind of a complicated and maybe at times even a convoluted process.
That's right. Resolution Home Loans, Noel-owned business. Chad runs it. Shannon's his top loan officer. If you call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit fsuhomeloans.com, actually, I had a friend of mine today text me. He's like, hey, what's that home loan place you guys rep on the show? And I was like, oh, call 844-FSU-HOME-LOAN or visit fsuhomeloans.com, and you'll be able to get with Resolution Home Loans. Pretty awesome. We set that number up and that website up so you can get right with Shannon. You don't have to deal with anybody else. You get to deal with the Noel. You get to deal with his ace. Chad still has his ace. Florida State Baseball, not so much, unfortunately. They give you the guarantee. They'll close within 15 days of the contract to closing date, where they'll give you $500 off of your closing cost. How do they do it? It's their almost home program. They eat the cost of the underwriting up front before you buy, so you know how much you can be approved for. You know you're good. Once you find the house you want, all that's left is appraisal, title, homeowner's insurance. Then get that thing, dude. Be able to move on it. That's what you want to do. Nobody likes taking forever on a home loan. They'll work with you, so give them a call if you are in need of a home loan. Also, we are going to have a new segment on the show called Buy or Sell. So if you want, you can send us some questions at thenolcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet them at us, and I'm sure other podcasts will try to steal our material. So we'll see, you know, if you want to hear your question answered on our podcast.
I was going to say, you can get your answer two or three times.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Funny how that happens. Yeah, Buy or Sell is going to be sponsored by Resolution Home Loans. Obviously, they want you to buy and, you know, shoot us some stuff. Like, kind of, it's almost like over under, or hey, you know, this guy, buy or sell, bud. This guy will throw for 8,000 yards this year, or something like that. And you know, if they're outrageous, we'll sell them. If they're reasonable, we'll probably buy them. So that could be a fun little segment on the show. Couple more questions here. Question. As intriguing as Louisiana hot sauce on goat cheese topped on guac. Whoa. Man, that's okay. I'm trying to think about texture wise. You got to eat it with a chip with some firmness, right?
Yeah, you've got to have some support behind your dipping there.
So here's the question: had Jimbo stayed on at FSU with minimal changes to the staff, where would Florida State's 2018 class have finished? Well, with minimal changes to the staff, they would have finished outside of the top 20.
Yeah, I would say somewhere between 26 and 34, somewhere in that window, well, would be my guess.
Because you'd have all these guys who stopped recruiting have to start recruiting again, and they'd be like, hey, good to talk to you, five-star. Haven't talked to you in, like 10 weeks. What's up?
We just wanted to fully focus on that awesome season we were having. We apologize. We've completely neglected to recruit you for quite a while. But let's get back in it. I mean, my opinion, if Jimbo had stayed and made minimal to moderate changes, that I think the best case you could see is a top 20 class. You just lost. You'd lost too many kids that there was no chance for you to get back in on. So I think in a way, coaching change actually benefited Florida State with a lot of those kids, because there was a legitimate reason as to, why they had a fresh voice in their ear. So it was always going to be a real challenge once you started to let that plane spiral down. It's a hell of a thing to try to pull out of.
All right, so next question here. It was mentioned that average second-year classes jumped 9-ish points in the rankings. So let's say from, 20th to 11th or something, from the inaugural class. As rivals had FSU's class ranked 11th, a jump of like 10 spots would be number one, which would be wild. Realistically, what kind of line would you guys draw? Top five, top three? So what are we setting? An over-under, basically, he wants for the 2019 class? Yeah. I will say the over-under is sixth.
Well, you're not signing number one, because I think Jimbo's already declared that they would do that.
Oh, did he?
He said something like that. Yeah.
He says a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Don't take my picture.
he's off to a strong start over there. I think Florida State will finish with somewhere around a top four class next year. That's my opinion. Right in that area, maybe give or take a place and a half.
By the way, on Jimbo, like no cowboy clothing this weekend.
Good. Good.
So I would, if you're wondering, does he have to wear it at all times? The answer is no. Gray t-shirt, ball cap, just look like a regular person.
Right. Yeah. That's probably more Jimbo Fisher's preference as far as what he wears as well. But
I think they have a real shot to get in the top five, because I think they're going to take a full class of 25. But I don't think they want to load up on everybody super early, because I think they're trying to get a good feel for who in the state they like. Obviously, they're behind on some relationships on kids because, some of these schools have been on these kids for 2 and 3 years now. Now, they're not as behind as they were in the 2018 class, in which they did a very nice job to finish. So keep that in mind, obviously. With all the prolific FSU alumni reemerging, it begs the question, how cold was Jimbo to former players? Was it his personality, or was it more about controlling the program? I actually don't think he was that cold to former
players. Yeah, I think this is a narrative that's kind of getting – Jimbo did a good job, particularly when he first took over. He did a great job of if you want to wonder who was cold with, I don't know for sure, but there were certainly
the Bobby regime.
There were certainly some players that were willing to tell you that they felt like they were almost inconveniencing the program to come around. It was not a healthy relationship. We laugh at Jimbo and we've been exceptionally critical at times, but I think a little bit of this is people unfairly rewriting history. Jimbo did a good job of getting former players involved and comfortable and back at the program and back on the sidelines. I think this is a little bit of an unfair narrative that's being woven.
I agree. Okay. All right. This will be the last one for tonight, because we're recording time. We're about an hour. I'm sure Justin will cut it down a little bit. Love the show, guys. Is it fair to say Miami missed a huge opportunity this recruiting cycle? Mac gets fired at Florida halfway through the season. Jimbo and co, for all intents and purposes, stop recruiting. Is it intensive purposes or is it intense in purposes?
It is not. It is intense.
Yeah.
It is not intensive purposes. I'm not picking on the questionnaire and I can't see it, but it's a hilarious. And trust me, not that I don't ever absolutely butcher and chop up the English language, as any longtime listener will have heard, but it is That it's most the purposes are never intensive. I'll put it that way.
All right. So for all intents and purposes, stop recruiting in September. Yet despite this, they couldn't, quote, lap the other Florida schools in recruiting or even pull a top five class while being located in South Florida. If Rick couldn't pull this off after all that went down this past season, isn't it fair to ask if he ever will? I think it's certainly fair to ask. I don't think that their class was disappointing, to be honest. They had a couple spots where they did not do a real great job of closing, most notably defensive line. And they signed 23 kids. Some of the classes ahead of them, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, signed more players, although USC, Clemson, Alabama signed signed considerably fewer. You know, look, it was a really good class. I like a number of players in their class. Did they have the opportunity to really put distance between themselves and FSU and Florida? To an extent, yeah, but I don't think you can do that with just one class. I think that has to be done with multiple classes. I will say Miami, if you care about early rankings, and I don't, but I know some people have already started asking about this, Miami has the number one rated class for 2019 so far. They already have 12 commitments. I will set the over-under for the number of kids in that class who actually sign with Miami at 8.5. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. I would say that Miami, of the major, of the, you know, larger brand schools, was the largest beneficiary of the early signing program. It kind of protected them from having a class that maybe could have turned disappointing. They were able to get a lot of kids in, and I think that the question is accurate in that they maybe missed the opportunity to land, I don't want to say a knockout blow, because you can't land a knockout blow in one class, but they had a chance to really have a special year, and it just didn't come to fruition. So I agree with the question that's being asked, or at least the way that I interpret the questioner's leaning in asking the question.
All right, that will do it for this week's show. We will. I gotta say, the question bank is getting a little bit empty. If you have a good question that we've not covered recently, go ahead and feel free to ask it. TheNolcast@gmail.com or Nolcast on Twitter. By the way, 5-star reviews, man. I got to tell you, I'm not saying we're lacking in the 5-star reviews, but it's been kind of a slow march, and we've released a lot of shows in March so far.
If you have the chance to give us
a lack of 5-star reviews,
if you have the chance to give us a ranking, it's very much appreciated. Anytime you can just support what we do on social media, it's awesome.
Now, we already have more than all other FSU podcasts combined by double. So, you know, I mean,
we're doing okay.
Maybe we're just running out of people to give us reviews.
Yeah, we're certainly the pool's smaller, but we appreciate those that have. If you haven't and you have the opportunity to, it's kind of silly how important those things are, but it makes a big deal, and it helps us to continue to evolve the show and hopefully take it in a direction where we can bring it to you in a more professional manner, more frequently, and just raise the overall level of content. And we'd be able to become the show that we have and grow the show because of the listening audience that we have. And we're very appreciative to all of you. So thank you very much.
So we had a couple people in the reviews ask us, why don't we do a daily show? And I've addressed this before, but if you're a new listener, we don't do a daily show because we don't feel there's enough, like, just strictly Florida State content to talk about on a daily basis throughout the year.
For all intents and purposes, we are a Florida State football podcast. Certainly, we'll touch on other sports, but 99% of what is covered here is Florida State football. And at this point in time, what Bud said is absolutely right. We've never brought a product unless we thought it was a good product and we had enough content to populate something that we would want to listen to. At this time, I don't think we could do a daily podcast that we would want to listen to and be fully behind.
So. You mean you don't want to hear me talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars or the NBA or the dating scene?
I'm not sure I want to hear you talk about it, and I'm sure people don't want to hear me talk about it either. So for now, we'll stick to Florida State football, and we'll try to increase the quality of show and maybe the frequency that we're able to bring them to people. But uh, no No plans to go daily anytime soon.
All right, man. I got fire LeBron takes if you ever change your mind. So
just store those away, my man. Thank you as always, folks, and we'll talk to you soon.